Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And begin we will. It's a very exciting day in The Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, because this show could have been crafted in your honour. This is Eta O'Brien, who is an intimacy on set coordinator. That's your website too, intimacyonset.com. You're a British movement director. I know you know who you are, but I'm just blowing a bit of happy smoke at you. A British movement director and intimacy coordinator for film, TV and theatre. Just last week, you've been in the same rehearsal room with Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman. So yes, you're there having worked for Amazon, BBC, HBO, Netflix. You've got going in crafting the movement to save actors from the hashtag awkwardness of how to go about being intimate on set. So you're very, very welcome. Eta, you can tell us in your own words, if someone asks you that clunky question, oh, hello, what do you do? Just tell us what you've done on the open road of helping actors and being an essential component on sets of the world.
So first of all, thank you, Chris. Thank you for that amazing introduction. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here. And I look forward to this conversation. So what I say that we do is intimacy coordinators and the role of the intimacy on set guidelines brings a professional process when creating intimate content in the creative industry, be it in live performance, TV or film.
You were credited by an actress called Michaela Cole, who thanked you when she was receiving her Best Actress BAFTA in 2021, saying thank you for your existence in our industry, for the making the space safe at last for physical and professional boundaries so that they can do the work that they're there to do without it being totally awkward. Even in my own career, we trained at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. When we met a few months ago, and it was Fiona Frankham at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School mentioned you, and I thought, gosh, what an interesting guest to have in the show to talk about intimacy on set. And we have the Central School of Speech and Drama in common as well. So yes, as I said, I had my own very awkward time once upon a time on set, where it was just left as a bit of an afterthought. And I was being straddled at the time by Sean Bean's soon-to-be ex-wife, Georgina Sutcliffe. It was very well intended, but it was so based on trust and just awkward, hope this is okay. So that's what's so incredibly important about the work that you do.
This is it. It has been completely mad that, you know, there's a brilliant dance, you're going to have a choreographer. You want a brilliant fight, you're going to have a fight director in theatre or live performance or a stunt coordinator in TV and film that brings skills that supports everybody to work creatively to create the best product, but also in that process to create the best physical storytelling. And the madness was that before my development of the work, it was happening across the globe and other places, but just lifting the lid and going, this is a body dance, the same as a brilliant tango, the same as a really exciting fight. How could you do Fight Club without someone choreographing those amazing fights? How could Tom Cruise do those amazing stunts of dropping down from a helicopter and running across roofs and without someone conceiving it? The producers hearing the director's vision, connecting with the stunt coordinator, listening to what's wanted, all that preparation put in place, skills taught to the actor. So if they don't know how to do a brilliant fight, if they haven't got the techniques, well, if you and I are both going to Bristol Vic, the marvellous John Howell, Deep Joy, teaching us our stage combat techniques. So I absolutely love him. He's the most marvellous human being, let alone an inspiring teacher. You're teaching all of those skills and then all of that preparation, all of that rehearsal, all of that checking out with the actor. So if an actor's going, great, I'm happy for my character to be told that he's being dangled from a rope from a helicopter and dropping onto a roof, great, but I'm afraid of heights. So guess what? You're going to get a stunt performer in to do that bit for you. All of that consideration was there, and it's exactly the same for the intimate content. And there was a void of that awareness. And for me, there was a few things. One, people were embarrassed, and people still are embarrassed fundamentally in their lives to talk openly and clearly about the intimate content. And rightly so, because yeah. also the core of your loving relationship should be for you and your loved one, and it should be a private thing. So that was all confused there. And then two, without a professional process by which you can talk about it professionally, so many directors would say to me, well, I felt really awkward about it, because if I start talking in detail about what I want, then I feel like I was a pervert or the weird one, because there wasn't a forum. And then the third thing was that there was a lack of awareness that, of course, you know that someone needs to be taught skills to either dance a tango or to throw a good fight with the right parameters, eye contact, distance, how to throw the net, all the rest of it. All of that's taught. But everybody has sex. Everybody knows how to have sex. And so we don't need a practitioner to come and teach someone techniques. And that was a void also, that then the fallout from that, when it's not done well, as you're saying, when it's awkward, comes from the fact that when someone is touched in a way that's not suitable for them, when they're asked to be naked in a way that's not suitable for them, or asked to perform degrees of intimate and sexual content in a way that's not suitable for them, that's outside their boundaries, that causes an injury.
Yeah.
But that injury before, sadly, you know, the tipping point of the Weinstein allegations and those brave women who came forward, that injury is emotional and psychological. And so while anytime that anybody says it's awkward, that's actually an injury.
Yes.
Anybody that says I feel uncomfortable or I feel a bit harassed to feeling downright abused, that is an injury to be mitigated against. But sadly, that emotional and psychological injury wasn't really recognised as something that a producer could be sued for until that tipping point. And that's what's really sad, because also money speaks. At the end of the day, the bottom line is that because producers then were aware that actually someone could bring a court case against that emotional and psychological injury, and it actually being accepted as much of a valid injury as someone breaking their ankle because they jumped off a roof in the wrong way, that's what made the producers change their tune, and then therefore the ripple effects. But regardless of how it came in, those are all the things that went to the role not being there before, and then raising awareness of the need for the role. And then for me, what I really enjoy, people say, you're there to keep people safe. And I say, no, I'm not. No, that's not my focus. You don't say to a brilliant stunt coordinator, you're there just to keep people safe. You don't say to a brilliant choreographer, you're there to keep people safe. No, the intention is to create Baz Luhrmann's amazing Roxanne tango that is the most spine-tingling number. In the process of that, you teach skills, you choreograph that keeps people safe. You don't say to Tom Cruise's amazing stunt coordinator, you're there just to keep people safe. No, they're there to have people on the edge of their seats to create a brilliant stunt sequence. And in the process is safety. And for me, that's the same. I come from being, you know, as a dancer and an actor, I'm interested in physical storytelling. I'm interested in mining into the core of who we are as human beings. I'm interested in telling beautiful human physical stories, making the best art, the best physical storytelling of who these characters are, something of beauty, or if it's challenging, something that makes you uncomfortable. That's the end goal. And inherent in that is safety.
You're beautifully eloquent about all of that. And as going back to that wonderful testimonial, thank you for your existence in our industry, was the quote that you got. And now you've mentioned it, it's staggering that it was an afterthought until, I think it was circa 2017, you really got on the open road of this.
Yes. So I started sharing what then I brought together as the Intimacy on Set Guidelines. I first of all presented the work to the group of agents, the PMA, Personal Managers Association, in June of 2017, pre-Weinstein. And then post-Weinstein, then the industry saying, we have to do better. And in post-Weinstein, then suddenly the Me Too and Time's Up movements, and the industry then creating codes of conduct for theatre, TV and film, saying we have to work with respect, and setting out those contracts. And then within that narrative and within your intention now to work with best practice, this is how you can work with best practice with intimate content that allows everybody to work openly, professionally, with respect for everybody. Yes. And then creates the best work. So I started talking about the work. And then April 2018, the first two productions that invited me in were Sex Education Season 1 and Gentleman Jack. And then in September of that year, I was co-working with a production, Watchmen, that was, some of it was being filmed with the amazing Jeremy Irons in a mad folly of a castle in North Wales. And I did all the intimate content there in September 2018 with Alicia Rodas doing the work in the US. So that was the beginning of actually being employed as an intimacy coordinator.
And was there a parallel universe going on in the States, or is it down to you that you've created the movement, created the awareness, and subsequently, therefore, created work for many, many other professionals alongside you?
Well, no, well, that's where I was developing the work. It was in the summer of 2017 that I started actually just Googling and seeing what else was going on. And that's where I discovered Alicia Rodis and Tonya Sina. They were people who had fundamentally come from stage combat background. And so they were developing it there in their own way as well, which I didn't know anything about until that point. I started calling the role the intimacy director, and so many directors got their back up. So I was going, no, let's shift this. Let's really help people to understand that it is absolutely akin to a stunt coordinator.
You're in good company with our fellow alumni, because Richard Ryan was an actor alongside me at the Old Vic Theatre School, and he's the stunt coordinator for many, many things, but including Vikings Valhalla now. And again, the parallel universes of you needing a coordinator makes complete sense. Intimacy versus fight versus choreography. It is my great pleasure and privilege then to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To show. It's the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into an energetic space called The Clearing to talk about your story of distinction and genius. So let's get you on the open road of this. Also, very excitingly, in terms of 7-year life cycles, if you started this work circa 7-8 years ago, the good news is you're also about to reveal your new book to the world as well. I'll tell you now, we'll invite you back when the book is published. But would you just like to position that before we get on the open road?
So, yeah, the book is very exciting. So I've got the textbook to write. That's this autumn's work. But I'm doing a commercial book, and I had several people come to me with different ideas, but this really resounded with me. So it's actually a book about, it's called The New Rules of, or the working title is The New Rules of Intimacy. But it's actually just sharing, before you can be intimate with somebody else, you have to be connected with yourself. And actually, it's a joyous journey through connection with the body, connection with breath, connection with nature, and then how you can listen to yourself, how you can support yourself, how can you can nurture your love of yourself. And then once you've got that connection going, and then how you take that into your relationships. And I'm fundamentally journeying through my movement practice. And each little bit that I'm speaking about, I'm just sharing another little bit of my movement practices, which inspires me. So, for example, you know, being grounded. One of my practices in the morning is literally just going and walking barefoot in the grass in the garden. And I'm very excited about sharing it. And I hope it's going to be inspiring for people.
So the working title, The New Rules of Intimacy, how lovely. Very exciting. Just one other thing. I think we nearly were, well, we were neighbours. I think we had Caledonia Place in common in Clifton Village. Is that right?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I was at number 3 Caledonia Place just before we moved down to Southville. And my daughter was born there in 3 Caledonia Place.
So Caledonian Place, it is Caledonian Place. So yes, my lovely life partner, Russell, was living at number 6 Caledonian Place when I went to Bristol Old Vic, and I looked at his flat to rent. And I was going to rent his flat. And then as it happens, he lived next door to Darren Brown, who was at number 7 Caledonian Place.
Number 7, please.
And I didn't end up renting the flat. That's another whole story. But I did get together with Russell, and we're actually will be having our 28th anniversary this October.
Hopefully you'll get into this too, but you had a very, very, very young baby with you when you went to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. So I hope we'll get onto all of this. Anyway, it's very exciting. Let's do this. Eta O'Brien, what is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Joyously, we moved to Sissinghurst in Kent in February 2021, and we have a little place. So we've got an acre of garden, and we made a wildflower meadow down the bottom. There's a corner where we've got lovely benches. We put benches in, and it's where we can watch the sunset. So we've got a wildflower meadow in front of us. We've got apple trees, and then we've got this lovely setting sun. So it's our cocktail hour place. And yeah, that quiet place where I can just go down there and see the sky and listen to the birds and think and contemplate.
Oh, that's lovely. No one in my circa 200 episodes has said their own wildflower meadow at the bottom of the garden as a cocktail hour position. Marvellous. So yes, we're in Kent then, in a wildflower meadow. Hay fever notwithstanding, I'm assuming. I'm a little bit of a sneezy person, shall we say, but you probably don't get that. But we're in your clearing, which is your meadow. Now I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing, and a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit deliberately existentially, I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. So this is where you've had 5 minutes to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and I'll talk about some squirrels in the film Up later. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Eta O'Brien, we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test, so I'll curate you through it. So let's go back to the four things that have shaped you.
The first thing that came to mind is the school that I happened to go to when I was five happened to have this lady, Madeline Sharp, who was the most amazing ballet teacher. She had taught Beryl Gray in the 1930s.
Wow.
I know. And she was already in her 70s. And she was this tall woman, so elegant, so distinguished. And she, you know, us as little five-year-olds, and she would have us absolutely the discipline, but just through a sense of expectation and ease. Anyway, you know, she was my very inspiring ballet teacher. And, you know, for as long as I remember, I just wanted to be a ballet dancer. And Madeline Sharp was such an incredible inspiration. She was the Royal Academy of Dancing's top children's teacher. She would be asked to do the demonstrations every summer. So we'd go to the Royal Academy of Dancing in Battersea, and she would, you know, we'd spend months preparing these demonstrations. All the parents had to create all these amazing costumes. And actually at seven, Madeline Sharp, the Royal Academy of Dancing, started filming through the grades, so they would anchor what the syllabuses were. And so Madeline Sharp was chosen to do the primary. So at seven, there was me in my little lovely white dress, along with my sister, actually, and about another seven or eight dancers being filmed dancing primary. And Margot Fonteyn was the narrator.
Oh, wow. And again, you're in really good company. Nola Ray, my last guest, the mime artist, was plonked down at the age of five in front of Swan Lake. Yeah. And that made her want to be Margot Fonteyn. So that's so extraordinary.
It was extraordinary. And having her come in, I've got a picture of me sat next to her with my head rested on her shoulder.
Oh.
Yeah, no. And so really in the best company, and obviously so inspired and so inspiring. And then I was a scholar at the Royal Academy of Dancing from the age of 10. And then I went to Bush Davis. But her inspiration and her legacy, and when Beryl Gray did This Is Your Life, Madeline Sharp couldn't make it. And in grade one, you have the bird dance and you had this bird cage. And Madeline Sharp still had the same bird cage that she'd used right from when Beryl Gray used it. And I was the person that in Madeline Sharp's little video that she made for Beryl Gray's This Is Your Life, I was the one that came in and did the turn with the bird cage.
Wonderful. That's a brilliant first shapeage.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So on you go, next shapeage.
So being Irish obviously has got a huge impact on my life. My mum's from Cookstown, County Tyrone in Northern Ireland. My dad is from Clonmel in Tipperary in the south. But that core of being an Irish person, so I'm absolutely a second generation immigrant. And when I've tried to do my ancestry, I'm just an Irish peasant from the land through and through. My mum's mum is from the Sparren Mountains, out the back hills of Cookstown. My dad's dad was a horse trainer, you know, sort of in the O'Brien clan. So yeah, just that connection with Ireland and the land is very much part of who I am. My mum was from a farm in Kildress, which is just outside Cookstown, and we used to go across to the farm for the whole of the 6 weeks in the summer holidays for pretty much right the way through my childhood. So that thing of landing there, and the madness was that I'd never even been into Belfast. They'd drive up to Stranraer and get the ferry across to Larne, and we'd drive through to Cookstown, and that was it. My mum's the eldest of 10, and one of her brothers, Pat, was the one who ran the farm, and we'd be up at 6 o'clock in the morning, out with Pat with a dog nip, rounding the cows up, helping him bring the cows in. This is all before mechanisation, so we'd be going, and he'd there with his chamois leather, teaching us how to lay, sit with our cheek against the cow and how to pull the teats in order to get the milk out and all the rest of it.
You started your intimacy training young. In that case, you've been very intimate with a cow to milk a cow. And how wonderful that it was very steeped in tradition.
Yes. So that's a really lovely thing. And I do feel that the off-kilterness of the Irish, in a way, I feel there's a bit of me that's, yes, that I'm an Irish person in England. And when I go back to Ireland, there's a sense of fitting in a way. So there's that. Catholicism, the shaping is to be and is the antithesis of Catholicism. So everything that is about basically, I fundamentally feel is, for me, I can't speak for everybody, and I feel there's a great difference between someone's religion and someone's spirituality. For me, the Catholic faith was, the dictatorshipness of it, the expectation to take everything on board, hook, line and sinker, and not question.
So as a prohibitor rather than an enabler for you.
Absolutely. And particularly recently, just going, all those things that are great challenges are actually your greatest teachers. So yes. A real gratitude to my mum in particular, sort of her whole life is absolutely in service of her Catholic religion. But for me, it's absolutely that's been my springboard, the antithesis of that. And then
your mum is still with us, reading between the lines there. Is that right?
She's going to be 90 in November.
Wow. Wonderful.
Yes. And then my dad, bless his cottons, just to honour him, it's the 6th of August today. He passed away on the 9th of August 2 years ago, 2022. Oh. Gosh. So, but he lived until he was 92, a grand old age. So in honour of him as well, he was a marvellous dancer.
I'll talk to you anon. I've got a new series trend, which is called The Big Birthday Show, and I'm looking for guinea pigs who are about 80 or 90. So 90, I could be coming for you to talk to your mum.
That would be interesting. And then listening to Nola Ray as well, just that thing of music. So for me as a dancer, when we used to do the demonstrations at the Royal Academy of Dancing, I was always the one that was chosen to do the free dance, just listening to music and just dancing. So that connection of me just hearing music and just that desire to move, that desire to express, the joy of that is absolutely been something that shaped me. And as I said, we've just come back from a holiday in Venice, first time I've been. We were there because a production that I worked on called Ruination with the amazing Lost Dog Dance Theatre Company. I'd supported that intimacy-wise. They put it on in the Limbury Theatre at the Opera House, December 2022. And then it's had a performance at the Dance Biennale in Venice just last week. So we were there for that. About the Art Biennale, which we attended, there's all different spaces with the different countries. And it was amazing, the amount of different rooms that had music. And it was lovely, sort of one sort of African one and sort of the beats there. And just as people go in, just seeing people that they can't help but move to the beat.
It's a lovely through line of you being in flow, which is just really lovely.
That's lovely that you say that. Yes, I would agree with that. Because I was going to say the next thing is just I feel that I am one of those people that is an experiential and a kinesthetic people. I experience the world through my body. So it's really interesting. My partner is very much in his head. He reads. He would listen to the radio all night if he could. He knows these facts about things. And when we listen to music, if I listen to a song, I will be listening to how it makes me feel and the rhythm of it and the quality of it and listening to the structure of the music. Whereas Russell would be going, oh, that line, blur. And I would be going, oh, my goodness, the connection with the actual words just would have passed me by, but I'm there in the feel of it. So my realization that I really experience the world through my body, and that's then what has informed really everything that I do.
I think that's four delicious shapages. Thank you. So if there's any overlap, that doesn't matter. Three things that inspire you now.
Excellence in anything I find inspiring. So like if you go to the supermarket and there's somebody who just is on top of their game, who's at the till and knows how to work things, at a cocktail bar, watching someone, who's got all the skills, who just has reached a degree of excellence. I love that. It doesn't matter who it is, and it's actually almost the antithesis of that. I feel anything that anybody does, you should do it to the best of your ability.
If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. As the
that's right, and nothing is too demeaning. I do believe in the thing of where on this planet to be of service, and I think that's yes, and countries that really know that being of service is an honour. And nothing is beneath anybody. If you're being a rubbish collector, thank you to everybody who's a dustbin man. It's a fundamental part of our society, isn't it? How you take away all your rubbish. And again, even watching dustbin men talk about flow, hanging on to the side of it, moving on to the next bit, jumping, getting the bins. So again, just inspiring people to go, nothing is beneath you. Anything that you do, if you're going to do it, you do it to the best of your ability.
That resonates again beautifully with thank you for your existence in who you're now describing. Yes.
Thank you. So on that thing of excellence, I remember Bohemian Rhapsody. I wasn't very good. I was such a ballet bod that I would just in my teenage years, I would spend four nights a week going to ballet, be it at the Royal Academy of Dancing in Battersea, or I'd traipse over to another amazing teacher called Irene Ayres, who had taught Leslie Collier in Orpington, or going to Madeline Sharp. So I just wasn't listening to any normal like pop music. But when Bohemian Rhapsody came out, I remember going, oh my goodness, that was the first thing that really hit me. Like, oh my goodness, what is this? And again, yeah, just the power of that. And then things like, I remember also just Taylor Swift, Shake It Off. Didn't know anything about Taylor Swift. And when that song came out, I'm going, oh my goodness, who is this person? She's incredible. Talk about someone who does something to excellence. So there we go. So excellence, nature. Absolutely, nature, being connected with the natural world, earth, air, fire and water, listening to nature, being inspired by nature, being connected with nature. I had the joy of, in my time, movement directing and teaching movement to actors, and I would teach neutral masks. And of course, one of the first exercises that you do is just with the mask on, just standing and just looking at, you know, this is one of Lecoq's basic exercises, is standing on a beach with your feet at the shore and looking out to nature, and you just describe the horizon as it. And again, it's such a brilliant exercise, because as human beings, that's who we are. We are creatures of, you know, the planet. We are stardust, we are earth, air, fire and water. So then standing on a beach, your feet are connected with the earth, you're looking out at water, you know, you've got the air around you and the sun above you, and just how you allow those elements to impact on you.
Such a beautiful, simplistic exercise. Sorry, simple and beautiful exercise.
Yes, absolutely.
I've described before.
Yes, it's at the core of who we are, you know. Yeah. And again, that aspect that through putting the mask on, the audience can only see what you're seeing through the impact of how you're expressing it through your body. And then I've actually had the joy of doing a week's workshop with a lady called Bonnie Bainbridge-Cohen. Have you heard of her?
No, but tell me more. Yeah.
Ooh, okay. So Bonnie Bainbridge-Cohen is someone who's just investigated the body throughout her life and then gradually sort of, explored things and then connected and then shared that. Well, when we had the week with her, she was at this stage, this was about, oh my goodness, it must be about 15 years ago. And it's the closest I've got to being in the presence of a little Yoda. She's wow. Truly amazing. And she was telling us that her kids at school were being asked, what do your parents do? And apparently her daughter said, I don't know what my mum does, but I do know that she makes it up as she goes along. When I was working with her, she was sharing with us the development of the organs in embryo. Can you believe? Yes.
Wow. Yes.
So we're experiencing ourselves as a zygote. At that stage of being just a zygote, as this ball of multifaceted cells journeying through the fallopian tubes into the womb and then anchoring into the lining of the womb, and the back cells of the zygote become embed and become the placenta. The front cells become the yolk for the time that the placenta is being formed, and three lines of cells drop down in the centre, the front line, the midline and the back line, and that's those three lines of cells is what becomes a human being. And then we went on to explore the development of the lungs and development of the kidneys. Incredible stuff.
This is all in a week, I'm hearing.
Yes, the development of the organs and embryo were all during a week. Oh, yes. So back to earth, air, fire and water. The aspects of who we are in our bodies, like so everything of our material, our bony structure, the architecture of our skeleton is earth. Our nervous system is fire, electricity and heat. Everything, all of our fluid systems is all of the water. And we've got so many different qualities of fluid systems in our body. We've got the spinal cord. We've got obviously our blood. You've got the lymphatic system. And then air, obviously the aerobic breathing air from outside to in, but also then the internal anaerobic breathing, every cell breathing. So as you can tell, I really love that connection, both in that neutral mask, just in order to be able to feel how, just like, again, just going and walking barefoot in the grass, that connection of earth, how you feel that sun on your face, but how you feeling that energy in your body, that connection with breath and the air around you, and that connection of the momentum and the element of water.
I can imagine every time you go to the sea, you arrive on the water's edge with your bare feet and you just look out. That's a great reset.
Yeah, no, and my family know if I go to the water in any way, shape or form, then I have to take my shoes and socks up and paddle in the water. I have to get my feet in the water.
Wonderful inspirations.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think now we're on to two things that never fail to grab your attention. And this is your, what are your squirrels? Oh, squirrels, borrowed from the film Up, what never fails to distract you, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you.
I did have my son say to me the other day when we were walking that I'm like a child, stopping and noticing everything. Can't remember where we were going. We were walking somewhere. And then actually just leaving Venice, we booked a water taxi and we had to leave at 6:30 in the morning and just... It was absolutely just sublimely beautiful, you know, and that speedboat on the water, journeying away from Venice, looking at Venice there with the sun rising. I would say beauty in all of its forms, and seeing beauty in all of its forms and nature. And again, going back, and then just loving excellence, you know. So yeah, just those two things, I think.
Lovely. This is sublime. And now, a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us, Ita O'Brien.
Oh, there are so many. When you went to Bristol or Vic, did you spend the first in the afternoon of the whole of the first term just reading through all of the lexicon of plays, right from Greeks right the way through to modern day?
Yes, there was a bit of history of theatre sort of class that was there. Yes, absolutely. I did the 2-year course. I don't know how many years.
So did I. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, and I remember that sight reading and just finding it so excruciatingly hard. And like for me with Shakespeare, I love Shakespeare, but the first reading, hopeless. It's like, you know, and then if I get into it, then it suddenly opens itself out to me. And I remember some people, you know, my sight reading was so bad that people would say, what's she doing here, apparently? And it's when I went to Central School of Speech and Drama that there I got tested for possibly having dyslexia. And I was like so completely dyslexic. So finding out that I was dyslexic was wonderful.
Yes.
Just because all of those things, just feeling that you're bad or terrible in certain ways, and you know, just that unconscious dyslexic where you're battling with these things your whole life, and you're slow at reading and slow at blah blah blah, and but being distracted, you know, is sort of like that thing of, as a dyslexic person, it's that thing that you follow that, and then that takes you onto that, and that takes you onto that, but that distraction, then I always see it as a spiral that then you gradually pull all those things in to a center.
Sometimes called the love of shiny things, isn't it? Oh, shiny, and then off you go to the next shiny. Yes.
Yeah.
Constant perpetual squirrels of dyslexia, which is a wonderful thing, a wonderful state.
That's right. But finding out that I was dyslexic, then you can flip it to the gift of dyslexia and understanding, this is where I am. This is my kinesthetic experience of the world, is partly from that.
Your superpower, and makes you a bit of a savant in being able to experience flow and presence and connection.
That's right. Anyway, but there you go. So is being dyslexic a fact? I don't know, but let's, yeah.
It's very wonderful. That's the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. Next, we talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, Ita, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
So with this role that I'm doing now, it's a very interesting one. And, you know, so say the fundamental tenets of the intimacy worker, open communication, transparency is the first one. That's the overarching, and then agreement and consent, clear choreography, and then really good closure. But that open communication, transparency, it's actually about making, you know, you talk about dyslexic-y things, it's about making those connections. And again, part of what we do as the intimacy coordinator is actually connecting departments across a production that perhaps might stay separate. And it's in that, you know, understanding, listening, finding out people's boundaries, and then communicating that so that everything is known, there are no surprises. And then once all those connections are made, it's very interesting. Then by the time you get to do the work, all of those open communications and connections have meant that you hit the ground running, you arrive on set, and you sort of tease those threads out of everybody so that actually there's a knowingness with everybody. So you can just then ride that flow of those communications that have already happened, the conversations that have already happened, the shared intention of what this scene is about that's already happened. If you've had a rehearsal that's already happened, and then it means that everything just happens smoothly, easily on the day on set. So that's a sense of being in flow. And then you can just stand back, and because you've created the shape and you've created the structure of holding that open communication has allowed for everybody, and allowing everybody to be listened to and heard. The director's vision, first of all, you're listening and you're hearing that, you're honouring that. connecting with the actors and listening and hearing them, listening to the first AD that's going to hold the floor, listening to the DOP that's going to for the camera angles or sharing back, so that then you can stand back and allow everybody to be in their flow, to bring the best of themselves in each of their different roles to creating a beautiful scene. So that's absolutely gorgeous. And then for myself, I am aware that when I was teaching movement, which is what I did to actors, and again, going back to me saying right from the get-go about being, you know, I'd be the one that Madeleine Sharp would say, you do the one that's the improvisation bit. So when I'm teaching movement to actors, invariably my first movement session I'll do with any new group is Five Rhythms. Do you know Five Rhythms?
No, tell me more.
So a marvellous lady called Gabrielle Roth developed what she called a wave, which is basically giving a structure to a flow of movement, but also that allowed everybody to be completely free within it. So and that the understanding of going anything as at all that you want to dance, it starts with that inspiration, that in-breath, that going inward, which you would call flowing. And then as that built, then it becomes the out-breath, which is then actually doing something out in the world, which becomes staccato, the masculine. And then that culminates in chaos, which is the alchemy, the buffering, the coming together of the masculine and the feminine. And then after that, you know, that culmination, that falls away, then you've discovered yourself anew from that experience, which is lyrical, and then that falls away to stillness. So those five rhythms then become, you dance them in a wave, and then you can explore anything through that wave, which is very exciting. So things like when I was movement directing on a production of Othello, you know, when it comes to the fit in Act 4, I didn't want to be imposing anything on the lovely actor playing Othello. So I did a five rhythm session with both Othello and Iago, because, of course, both of those characters are fundamentally driven by jealousy. So we explored the wave of jealousy, and then I was able to take whatever he found, the person playing Othello, in the chaos for the height of the fit that you see in Act 4, and without, you know, to take what he had found in his own physicality. But the fundamental warm-up from that is just a body parts warm-up, just, you know, moving the different body parts. And
that's a great answer. Alchemy and gold right there, the flow of your purpose, which was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to award you with a cake. So first of all, I have to ask you, do you like cake, Ita?
Absolutely, love cake.
So what cake would you like? Unfortunately, it's a metaphorical one until I get to meet you in person and I can give you one, but what would you like?
Oh, goodness. My daughter makes the most marvellous carrot cake. She's an absolute genius at making cake. She doesn't realise that not everybody can make cake, and this particular carrot cake is so moist. It's just unbelievable. So there we go.
So wonderfully moist carrot cake. This is a bit like a carrot cake. You can see that that's my gift to you. Now you get to put a cherry on the cake with stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote, Ita, that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
Ah, the lovely Rudy Shelley, he would say to us, don't listen to me, go out and find for yourselves. Do you remember that one?
I do, yes.
So that aspect of sort of like, you know, you can listen to people can inspire you, but take that inspiration and go out and see how that impacts on you in your own life. I think that.
And for listeners out there, Rudy Shelley was the ancient sort of Yoda-esque mystic acting teacher, who was at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, part of the very old guard of wonderful, unforgettable, genius teachers. So just say his quote once again.
So, and just to add to that, he was at Bristol Old Vic. He taught at Bristol Old Vic for 60 years. But he was the movement teacher.
Yes.
When he first came, he was the movement teacher. And I loved that, the fact that obviously, as you say, he sort of morphed into just this Yoda of incredible wisdom. And actually, I've got some of his photos because I was with him, and I would go to, you know, to have private sessions with him in his flat in the months as he was ill and coming up to dying. And so he gave me some of his dancing photos, which are so beautiful. Anyway, but one of his quotes was, don't listen to me, go out and find for yourselves.
And I'd love to have a look at those photos someday. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. What a precious gift to have had those last few months being close to him.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So now, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Don't know if it's advice, but a sort of thing to live by is being gratitude. No matter how little you've got, no matter how much you think you haven't got, living a life of gratitude, being grateful for what you have.
Yes.
Just sends that ripple out to the world. I remember I do a thing where sort of I light a candle before I go to bed, and then think through the day, particularly those years when I was by myself, and days that you think you had a bad day, and when you think through the day, then in fact you realize that there's always something that's utterly beautiful. Gratitude, being gratitude for life.
Wonderful. You may have covered this, but just in case, with the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you offer to a younger version of Eta O'Brien?
Keep listening to your gut instinct, you know, what your heart desires, and follow that.
Lovely answer. And now we're ramping up to Shakespeare to talk about legacy shortly. But just before we do that, and by the way, this is the actual book I bought to go to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. So it says Chris Grimes, 16986. I think we were 10 years apart at the Bristol Old Vic
Theatre School. Yeah.
So when I dug this out as my prop when I got going with the podcast, I thought this is the actual one to use, which is exciting. Yeah. We're getting there soon. But just before we do that, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So now you've experienced this from within, who instinctively would you most like to pass the golden baton along to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
I think somebody who is just amazing. He's just such an inspiration. Is such a beautiful sharing of humanity is my a lovely friend, Darren Brown, who, like you say, we met in Bristol, and he moved up to London. He actually moved close to us, and now he's moved back to Bristol, as it happens. And he's the most fabulous human being and most amazing exponent of magic. So I think he'd be a very interesting person.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to furnish me with a warm introduction. Hopefully he'll say
marvellous. I'll see. I'll contact him and see what he says.
Wonderful. So now then, inspired by Shakespeare and all the worlds of Steedred, all the bitted, we've been merely players. Eta O'Brien, intimacy on set.com and intimacy coordinator, with your natural inflowness just seeping out at all points. How, when all is said and done, would you most like to be remembered?
Oh, goodness. I would, as a person who inspires people to tell beautiful human stories.
Where can we find out all about you with your book coming soon with the working title, The Murals of Intimacy? Where can we find out all about you and your work on the internet, Eta O'Brien?
So, yes, intimacyonset.com. We've got a new version of it coming in the autumn, but for now you can go there. It's not the best. But the new one's coming. And also, anybody at all who is feeling that they're doing some intimate content, not too sure how to go about it, and worried, particularly, you know, younger people, filmmakers, worried about money, please go to Intimacy On Set and go to the Intimacy On Set guidelines. They're there for anybody to follow. They're also translated into several languages. So, yes, I had someone say to me, oh, but, you know, our company's had our funding cut. And I'm saying, but it's not about money. It's about the intention to work with best practice. So go to the Intimacy On Set guidelines, read them. And again, it's that intention of working with open communication, transparency, listening to the agreement and consent, honouring everybody's boundaries in whatever way. And then know that as creative people, you can always tell physical storytelling. Yeah, so honours whoever it is performing, honours their boundaries, working creatively, either using theatre techniques of sort of slow motion or sort of shadows or whatever, or in TV and film using camera angles and things. You can always tell a physical story that honours the actor's requirements and honours your physical storytelling. And in that place, we can all make really good work and share who we are, the best of who we are and our loving in our humanity.
Wonderfully eloquently put. And for those that want to visit your website as well, there is a segue into a wonderful Guardian culture film called Staged Sex, How an Intimacy Coordinator Works with Actors on Sex Scenes. And I really enjoyed watching that to get a much clearer understanding of your work beyond what I already knew. So that's something else to point people to. As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, Intimacy Coordinator Eta O'Brien, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yes, what I would like to say is, in our world where our kids are more and more disconnected from their bodies and connected to all different forms of screens, be it their phones, their computers, just saying, keep our kids connected to nature. Keep our kids going out and playing in the woods and climbing trees, and keep them connected with themselves and in our natural world. Are really cool to our education systems. Take people out in nature, copy what they do in the Finnish, that all of their lessons are done outside in nature. They only come in when they absolutely have to. because we're losing that connection with our kids. They're becoming less and less embodied and less connected in their relationships. And I'm just inviting us, just flip that lid and just keep everybody connected to nature and to their bodies. And it'll help us to be more healthy human beings. And thank you very much for, it makes me smile every time you say distinction and genius. I don't think of myself in that way at all. So it's absolutely a joy to be couched in those terms. And thank you so much for inviting me on and giving me the opportunity to share my inspirations.
And right back at you. Thank you very much indeed for saying yes. So I'll stop recording there. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. Look at the new website, thegoodlisteningtoshow.com. And there are 7 different series strands about how you too can get involved in the show. One of which, of course, I mentioned is The Big Birthday Show, which is, I'm looking for 70, 80, 90, 100. I have recently interviewed somebody who's 100 called Amazing. Mabel. And it was called Mabel's Marbles because she's still got them all and she was happy to be there. Anyway, la-di-blah, goodlisteningtoshow.com. I've been Chris Grimes, but most importantly, thank you so much. This has been Eta O'Brien. And anything else you'd like to say now?
No, thank you, Chris. It's been a joy.
And good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called The Big Birthday Show. To help with that perennial question, what do you get for that special someone who has everything, e.g. your Aunt Fanny or your Uncle Bob? Well, now you can give them an episode of The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes, as your host. To help Aunt Fanny, Uncle Bob, birthday boy or birthday girl celebrate their big day. So yes, if you know of anyone that has a big O coming up on their birthday soon, be their 40, 50, 60, 70, 180, 90, or 100, then why not get in touch to find out more about The Big Birthday Show? Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.